Mahasamaya Day. Today is the Mahasamaya Day, which Buddhists celebrate all over the country in commemoration of the Mahasamaya Sutta, which the Buddha delivered on this full moon of Nayon, June. First, as to the origin of the Sutta. On this day, 500 Sakyan monks practiced meditation in a forest near Kapilavatthu, in accordance with the Buddha's instructions, and on that very day they became arahats. The monk who became the first arahat came to inform the Buddha of his attainment. But just as he was about to address the Buddha, he saw another monk coming, and so he could not speak of his arahatship. As the 500 monks kept on coming one after another, none of them was able to achieve the object of his visit. This was due to the fact that they had no desire to let others know of their accomplishment. A true arahat wants to share his enlightenment with others. He is anxious to see others as arahats, but does not want others to know his attainment, and he keeps it a secret as much as possible. He does not let any non-bhikkhu have an inkling of it. He may sometimes have to reveal it when pressed by a bhikkhu. Even then, he would let it be known indirectly. Once a bhikkhu who had renounced his family to don the holy robe and was attending on an arahat asked the latter how an arahat looked like. Of course, he did not know the attainment of his preceptor. The arahat said, "It is hard to know the arahat. Even a monk who is serving the needs of an arahat does not know the spiritual status of his teacher." Thus, because he had no vanity, the arahat did not reveal his accomplishment. If they did let others into their secret, they did so on the eve of their parinibbana. So, not wishing to let others know of their arahatship, the 500 bhikkhus did not tell the Buddha anything but sat in silence. At that time, the devas and brahmas came to pay their due respect to the Buddha and the new arahats. It was a very big assembly. The Buddha announced the list of deities present and then preached the suttas that benefit their six types of temperaments. It is said that at the end of these discourses, countless devas and brahmas attained illumination. Brahmacharya, or chastity. The subject of our talk today is chastity. According to Salaika Sutta, we should practice chastity, although other people may indulge in unchastity, our brahmacharya. People who cannot abstain from sexual acts are very great in number. The only exceptions are the bhikkhus, who live up to the Vinaya rules faithfully, and the laymen and laywomen, who are committed to moral codes that insist on chastity. The majority of mankind indulge in sex. But sexual indulgence is not an immoral act, like killing or stealing, if it does not mean unlawful sexual intercourse. Unchastity by itself cannot land a layman or laywoman in the lower worlds, and so it is not a grave offence like killing. There are two kinds of unchastity. Unchastity that amounts to unlawful sexual intercourse, and unchastity which we cannot equate with such sexual offence. Everybody should abstain from unlawful sexual intercourse if the layman does not avoid the second kind of chastity, i.e. legitimate sexual act. His morality as regards the five precepts remains untainted. If he can avoid it, so much the better for his spiritual life. But the bhikkhu has to avoid all sexual acts completely. Any indulgence in sex means a violation to his moral life. So presumably, this passage in the sutta was primarily intended for the strictly celibate bhikkhus. But it concerns those who observe 8 or 10 precepts or any other moral code that emphasizes chastity. Chastity is the lifelong practice of the Buddha and the Arahats. The layman who practices chastity, even for a single day, possesses in part the moral attribute of the noble ones for that day. His life is then very noble and pure. If he cannot practice it, he should resolve to abstain from unlawful sexual intercourse. Kamesu michachara, illicit sex. Kamesu michachara is sexual misconduct. It refers to all kinds of sexual relations conducted in violation of the traditional code of sexual ethics laid down by good and wise men. There are 20 kinds of women with whom men should have no sexual relations. Briefly, they are women under the guardianship of parents and relatives, women under the guardianship of clansmen or kinsfolk, women under the protection of her fellow members of a religious order, married women, betrothed women, and so forth. Men should avoid sexual contact with such women. As for a married woman, she should have no sexual relation with any man other than her husband. Men and women who engage in such illicit relations are guilty of sexual misconduct, and so everyone should avoid this breach of morality. Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya, or chastity, is abstinence from all sexual acts, regardless of the legality or otherwise of such acts. Bhikkhus, hermits and nuns have to practice chastity for life. Laymen and laywomen are committed to it while they observe precepts of higher morality. As in the case of killing and stealing, the Buddha in Salaka Sutta says that we should practice chastity even though others may indulge in unchastity, Salaka Vara, that we should cultivate thoughts about chastity, Chitupadavara. This resolution is meant for bhikkhus, samaneras, nuns and lay Buddhists who have pledged themselves to higher moral life. The meditating yogi who observes 8 precepts is committed to chastity for a number of days or months. Those who cannot practice chastity should avoid unlawful sexual acts. Parikamana, vara, etc. Like non-killing, etc., the practice of chastity means the avoidance of an evil path. It contributes to spiritual uplift and is conducive to the extinction of defilements. It is hard for those who have sexual desire to practice chastity. This is because they are blind to the evils of sexual defilements. It is therefore necessary to reflect on these evils. Attachment to sexual pleasure means impurity of mind. We are dominated and enslaved by sexual desire. For the sake of sexual pleasure, we have to suffer, commit crimes, and face penalties. We do misdeeds that lead to the lower worlds after death. We cannot free ourselves from the lower sexual life or from samsaric plane of existence. If a man leads a life of chastity, his spiritual status is high. Look at the bhikkhus. People revere the bhikkhu and offer food, etc., because of his chastity. His spiritual life will be much higher if he possesses moral integrity, tranquility, and wisdom. But morality in itself is a mark of a noble life and ensures the respect, adoration, and generosity of lay people. Such virtuous bhikkhus are seldom in need of food, robes, dwelling, and medicine. So to those aged monks who come and ask for robes, I say, "Sir, you are in dire need of robes because of your lack of moral attribute. If you have this attribute, the laymen and laywomen will surely offer you robes. Therefore, sir, try to live up to the moral ideal." The Buddha himself gave the same advice in Akkakamkaya Sutta. That is, that a bhikkhu should perfect his moral life if he wants to be well provided with the four necessities of life. Hence, chastity contributes to material and spiritual welfare in this life, as well as to progress on the samsaric plane and towards final attainment of nibbana. Those who are committed to lifelong chastity should practice it strictly. We say strictly in the sense that they should avoid not only major sexual acts involving mutual agreement and intercourse between two persons, but also minor sexual behavior. In the Metuna Sutta of the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha mentions seven kinds of minor sexual acts. Seven minor sexual acts. On one occasion, a Brahmin called Janusoni approached the Buddha and asked him a question. He was a learned man, well versed in the Vedas. In those days, learned Brahmins used to question, discuss, and argue with the Buddha. The Hindus of modern times are descendants of those Brahmins, and so Janusoni might be called a Hindu pandit. He asked the Buddha, "Does Gotama claim to be a holy man who practices chastity?" He asked this question because he considered the Buddha unqualified to be called a brahmachari, one who practices chastity. According to the practice of chastity prescribed in their sacred books, a Brahmin remained unmarried and devoted himself to the study of Vedas until he was 48 years old. At 48, some Brahmins begged for alms, with which they repaid the debt of gratitude to their teachers, and then they became ascetics. Some went to the house of Brahmins who had daughters of marriageable age. They asked for marriage to such girls for the perpetuation of their families in exchange for the merits which they had acquired through the practice of chastity for 48 years. The Brahmins who wished to acquire merit without any effort gladly gave away their daughters with ceremony. It would be hard for Buddhists to understand such an offering, but this is not surprising in view of the occasional reports that we hear in Burma of daughters being offered to a charlatan who poses as a member of the royal family. Brahmins offered their daughters because of their faith in Vedas, while some Burmese gave away their daughters under certain delusions. What some people do may seem absurd in our eyes, but it is born of their hopes and convictions. With the birth of a child, the Brahmin considered himself to have fulfilled the function of procreation, and some became ascetics, while some continued to live the life of a householder. Janosoni believed that only those who, like these Brahmins, were pledged chastity for 48 years should call themselves the holy Brahmachari, a title which he contended must be denied to the Buddha, who, as Prince Siddhartha, had enjoyed married life for 13 years. The Buddha replied that he indeed was a true Brahmachari. Then he pointed out the 7 minor sexual acts that tend to blemish and degrade chastity. These are as follows. 1. Some so-called samanas and brahmanas claim to be brahmachari by merely abstaining from sexual intercourse with women. Yet they welcome and enjoy being fondled, massaged, bathed, cleansed and powdered by women. Such indulgence is the cause of degradation of chastity. The chastity of these persons is not pure. It does not contribute to their spiritual liberation. This is the first sexual act. Among the Buddhist Sangha too, some elderly monks are reported to have allowed themselves to be massaged by women. This practice will surely cast a slur on their chastity. Delight in contact with females and any effort to that end lay a bhikkhu open to the charge of Sangha Disesa offence. 2. Joking and talking merrily with women. There is no physical contact, but the act involves joking, teasing and kidding. If the talk refers to obscenities, the bhikkhu concerned is also guilty of Sangha Disesa offence. 3. Staring at a woman with pleasure. 4. The woman is not visible because of the walls, partition, or curtains, but her voice is audible. The ascetic, or the Brahman, is pleased to hear the woman laughing, crying, talking, or singing. This way of seeking pleasure is nowadays more widespread than before. The songs of women over the radio can be heard everywhere. To enjoy hearing these songs is to indulge in minor sexual pleasure. Retrospective pleasure over the pleasant time which one spent formerly with women. This concerns especially those who take to ascetic life after having indulged in worldly pleasure in their youth. Six, envying the rich who are given to the pursuit of sexual pleasure. Such an envy cannot but lead to the degradation of chastity. This sexual act is subtle. These minor sexual acts from number 1 to number 6 are concerned with the present life. 7. The last minor sexual act is the desire to be reborn in the deva world by virtue of one's morality and chastity. This means the desire for sensual pleasure in the company of angels in the next existence, and as such it does not differ basically from the desire of the monk who looks forward to having a good time when he leaves the order. So the craving for the pleasure of the celestial abodes is described as a sexual act by the Buddha. In fact, the object of the bhikkhu in joining the Sangha is to achieve not heavenly bliss, but liberation from the cycle of rebirth. These seven minor sexual acts may be committed by the bhikkhu as well as by the Buddhist laymen who observe the eight precepts. Furthermore, everything that we have said about the defilement of male chastity applies equally to females. Of the seven minor sexual acts, it is the first two that largely lead to moral breakdown. That's welcoming, enjoying, being fondled, massaged, bathed, cleansed and powdered by women, and joking and talking merrily with women, teasing and kidding. The other five acts by themselves are not so destructive, though they tend to defile morality. So the bhikkhu should, if possible, avoid all the seven acts. It may not be possible for non-meditating people to free themselves wholly from the desire for heavenly pleasure. Even among the meditators, the desire may lurk in those whose object is only to avoid rebirth in the lower worlds. But the meditating yogi makes a mental note of all thoughts and desires about minor sexual acts and overcome them. This is no more difficult for them than it is for a sick man who has medicines to cure his disease. They also discard all unwholesome thoughts about sex through firm resolution. Non-followers of the Buddha who practice chastity did not consider it necessary to avoid minor sexual acts, nor did they know how to exercise mindfulness and reflect to that end. Hence, those who practiced chastity for 48 years in the Brahmanical tradition were not free from the minor sexual acts. Their marriage life after 48 years of chastity also made them sexually impure. The Buddha brought home these facts to the Brahmin Janusoni and added that he claimed to be the all-enlightened Buddha only after he had completely overcome the seven minor sexual acts. Much impressed by this teaching, Janusoni became the disciple of the Buddha. It was not only the Buddha, but the Arahats also had nothing to do with minor sexual acts. Even at the Anagami stage, the Arya is free from attachment to the world of form and the formless world. At the first two stages of holiness too, the bhikkhu is usually free from sexual acts. It is also necessary for lay Buddhists to avoid them when they are meditating or observing the precepts. In this way, they can enhance their chastity and make it immaculately pure. I have referred to minor sexual behavior for the sake of those who set their heart on higher chastity. As for ordinary chastity, that most people understand by the word brahmacharya, its purity is not affected so long as one avoids sexual intercourse. The lay Buddhists who cannot keep themselves chaste should avoid illicit sex. Those who commit sexual excesses have to pay dearly for them in their future existences. According to the Buddha's teaching in Anguttara Nikaya, they are liable to land in the netherworlds, and when they are reborn as human beings, they tend to have many enemies. The karmic records of those who avoid unlawful sexual intercourse are just the opposite. After their death, they will reach celestial abodes, and on their reversion to the human world, they will have no enemies but many good friends. The commentaries on Kudakapata and Itivuttaka mention 20 karmic effects of chastity. Of course, 8 are specially worthy of note. The karmic rewards are 1. Having no enemies. 2. Being in no danger of rebirth in the lower worlds. 3. Being in no danger from any quarter. 4. Being able to do anything openly without any fear. 5. Being able to speak fearlessly, straight from the shoulder. 6. Being able to speak without hanging one's head. 7. Being loved by other people. 8. Happy married life. 9. Abundance of consumer goods. 10. Having all the sense organs, such as eyes, ears, etc. 11. Possession of the essential attributes of the male and the female. 12. Not being a eunuch. 13. No change of sex. 14. Having no occasion to part with one's beloved. 15. Being able to sleep soundly. 16. Having no worry about food, clothing, etc. 17. Being not short-tempered. 18. Having no fear or shyness. These are the karmic benefits accruing to those who avoid unlawful sexual intercourse while observing the 5 precepts, or who practice chastity while observing the 8 precepts. Needless to say, the same benefits accrue too from the lifelong chastity of bhikkhus. The following is a story illustrative of such benefits. That will follow on the next reading.